This is an audio archive edition of WINA's Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot, made available online by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network, cvillepodcast.com.
Rick Britton joins me live in studio. Celebrated local author, cartographer, historian. You know who this is? This is one of my favorite renditions.
No, but I got goosebumps listening
to
that.
I love
That's
this.
That's great.
This is Mickey Newberry.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the arrangement he did called American Trilogy
right.
in 1971.
Mm-hmm.
Elvis did it in 72, and it became an Elvis staple.
Mm-hmm.
But this is the original
nice.
Of Mickey Newberry.
Yeah, it's really nice.
Yeah, he is really something.
Look away, Dixieland.
I remember when I was a kid, and I asked my mom, I said, how do you whistle? I couldn't have been more than 3 or 4 years old. And I remember she was showing me how to whistle. It was in our house down right near Emory University in Atlanta, Georgia, on Cornell Road. And I remember standing in the kitchen there because I can remember the way the light was coming through the windows and going across the floor. And she was showing me how to whistle, and she was whistling Dixie. I'll never forget that.
That's great.
That's the very first song I learned how to whistle back in the late 1960s.
When you said that, you know, that reminded me of that Bogey movie. And, of course, Lauren Bacall, you know, famously turns to Bogey and says, you know how to whistle, don't you? You just put your lips together and blow.
Yeah.
And then she walks out of the room and Bogey goes,
yeah.
That's a great scene.
Terrific movie.
Oh, yeah.
So you have we want to talk about Appomattox today. We're going to put a bow on this series.
That's
but
right.
Before we do that, you have a new speaker series coming up
it's
at Mickey Tavern, right?
Yeah, it's called Mickey Tavern Talks, and the dates are January 13th, 27th, February 10th, and the 24th. Those are all Thursdays. And the talks will start at 11 o'clock, and then after the lecture, we're all going to tromp on over. So these are in the old tavern, in the ballroom of the old tavern proper, and then we're going to tromp on over to Mickey Tavern, the new facility, and have one of those great lunches. So the cost is $25, and people need to reserve a seat because it's limited seating in the ballroom. The number to call is 977-1234, kind of easy to remember.
I remember one afternoon I spoke up there in the and it was snowing, and it was I remember getting up there and getting set up with the projector and the slides, and had a terrific group of people that came out, and I'll never forget thinking I would rather be nowhere else right now. It's cold outside, it's snowing, and I'm at the Mickey Tavern in front of some big, huge, roaring fireplace. It was fantastic.
Yeah. Oh yeah, that's a great venue over there, and the folks are really, really nice. We're gonna do talks on. I picked three of the most famous people who have ever, walked our sidewalks and traveled our byways with us here in Central Virginia: Anastasia, Edgar Allan Poe, and the Marquis de Lafayette. So it's going to be some great lectures.
Good stuff. We're talking with Rick Britton live in studio. Now, Rick, for months we've been talking about these historic Civil War battles and the ones that took place in Virginia. And it's an interesting window onto the war to just look at Virginia,
sure,
where most of the war was fought anyway.
60% of the war.
And so you really get a portrait of the war that you don't normally get when you just focus on Virginia soil and what was going on. And so today we want to hear the story of this last event, this last major act in the United States Civil War here in Virginia, and that's the Battle of Appomattox.
Yeah, the Appomattox Courthouse. When last we got together, and it's been a while ago now, hasn't it? Hasn't it been a few weeks since we talked about Sailor's Creek? Sailor's Creek was on April 6th, 1865, and a big chunk of Robert E. Lee's Army of Northern Virginia, about 7,000-8,000 men and seven or eight generals, killed, wounded, captured. The generals captured and sent to a fort in Boston Harbor. So they were put on the train and sent all the way up north because the war hadn't ended. This was one of the major reasons, this loss at Sailor's Creek, one of the major reasons, one of the top three. And I'm hoping that there's a book in my future about this because I'm just fascinated by the Appomattox retreat, the Appomattox campaign. One of the major reasons that Lee surrendered 3 days later at Appomattox Courthouse on May 9th, Palm Sunday, 1865. So following Sailor's Creek, the only choice is to go to the west. Robert E. Lee the whole time, as you remember, had been trying to get to the west, get out into western Virginia, then take that left and go south and try to join up with Joseph E. Johnston's army in and around North Carolina, the North Carolina-Virginia border.
Was he headed to Danville? Was he going through Danville?
Yeah, and yeah. Johnston at the time, you know, was fending off William Tecumseh Sherman's army, who had followed him all across. You know, he had gone all the way across Georgia and then into South Carolina and North Carolina, and Johnston is trying to hold him off in North Carolina. Of course, Sherman has Johnston outnumbered, just like Robert E. Lee was outnumbered by Ulysses S. Grant and Meade and the Army of the Potomac. So the strategy in the field that worked was, while the Federal infantry was chasing the Confederate infantry west, Sheridan and a large cavalry force, Sheridan playing a big part here at the end of the war. You know, you'd have to say that he's Grant's a right-hand man at this point. Sheridan and a large force of cavalry is pacing them to the south, pacing the Confederate infantry to the south. But of course, being horse soldiers, they can outstrip them. So they actually get across them to the west, get across their path, get across their escape route. So when Lee and the army arrives at Appomattox Courthouse, they eventually get surrounded on three sides. To the east, going back towards Richmond, to the south, mostly by infantry, and then to the west by Sheridan's cavalrymen. So,
how many people are we talking about?
How many people?
Yeah, how many soldiers? How many soldiers on either side are we talking about by the time we got to this point?
Well, as we're going to see in just a moment, Robert E. Lee surrenders about 28,000 men, and 7,000 or 8,000 had been surrendered at Sailor's Creek. So, you know, toward the end of his retreat here, he only had about 35,000. So when he gets to Appomattox Courthouse, maybe a few more than 28,000, because some actually escaped the encirclement. Not many people know about this, but some of the cavalry actually rode out of the encirclement, and they made it to Lynchburg and surrendered at Lynchburg a few days later. So not everybody, not the entire Army of Northern Virginia that was left, surrendered at Appomattox Courthouse. And there's another, you know, piece of this book in my future, I hope. But facing them, you know, somewhere around 100,000
holy cow
men in the, you know, in the Army of the Potomac. Yeah, yeah. Facing them. So,
and Appomattox Courthouse is the name of the town, right?
Appomattox Courthouse. And the reason you say courthouse, it means it's the county seat of Appomattox County.
Just like Charlottesville for Albemarle County.
Right, and just like Scottsville used to be Albemarle Old Courthouse, because it was the seat of Albemarle County, you know, prior to it being cut back. But anyway, so they get surrounded on three sides, and not a lot of people know about this, but there was actually a battle at Appomattox Courthouse on April 9th, 1865. Robert E. Lee and the people, his men had been talking to him, and a lot of people saw the signs. I mean, the army was dwindling. They started off when they left Richmond and Petersburg and left those lines. They started off with around 50,000 men. They can see the guys leaving the army. They can see the units getting smaller. And they tried to talk with him, and he says, no, you know, it's not yet the time. So Robert E. Lee that morning actually orders one more attack. So he's willing to try one more assault. And so they scrape together 2,000 or 3,000 men. And the idea is to attack to the west and try to break through what they thought was only a cavalry screen. And in this last assault, you know, you have to think of how pathetic this was. Some of the units, some of the Confederate infantry regiments were so small that the battle flags get all crowded together. You know, they're the size of companies. Regiments that started off the war at 800-900 men, you know, they're 40 or 50 guys left crowded around this battle flag. And when you put a bunch of those battle flags together, you know, it was this sea of red. This last Confederate assault, and initially a lot like some of these other battles that we've been talking about lately. Cedar Creek was the same way. Initially, it was successful. Fort Stedman, the same way. Initially, they were doing okay. Even at Five Forks, initially, they were all right. They actually overran the first federal line of cavalry fighting, dismounted. They actually captured a few pieces of artillery from the enemy. But as the federal cavalry retreats, all of a sudden they see that there's an infantry line behind them. And the man who was in charge of this attack, Lee put Gordon in the attack, Major General Gordon, the same man that he had put in the attack at Fort Stedman, certainly one of his most aggressive major generals. Gordon sends back the word, you know, we can't go any farther. That's it. We can't break through this infantry line. They've got us boxed in, going to the west too. At that point, when Robert E. Lee gets the message that there's no breaking through that line, that's it in his mind. And that's when he reaches that decision, and he tells his men, I must go and talk with General Grant, and I would rather die 1,000 deaths.
We're talking about the events on April 9th, 1865, at Appomattox Courthouse. So how did it work when Lee went to talk to Grant? Did they talk in the courthouse? Or did they go to like a tent somewhere?
They actually did, and this was a few days later. They had been sending messages back and forth. Grant was trying to get him to surrender. Lee earlier, you know, during the campaign, the Appomattox campaign, had sent him notes back inquiring as to the terms of the surrender. So they had already been talking about it, but the point I was making earlier was Robert E. Lee hadn't made up his mind. Some of his officers, I know Longstreet tried to talk him into it earlier, and you have to think that when it seemed inevitable, and it seemed inevitable earlier than April 9th, 1865, than anybody who died afterwards, that blood is on Robert E. Lee's hands. You'd have to, in a way, think that way. So it's a tough decision to make.
The government, the Confederate government had already gone south, right?
Yeah, the Confederate government was in flight. The Confederate government, because Jeff Davis, the way he was, you know, he considered that they were still active, and you know, he was one of these guys. He was a diehard. He was going to try to fight it out to the very end. He kept thinking, oh, I can get to Joe Johnston's army, and then Joe Johnston's army surrenders a few weeks later. Well, if I can not just get out to the Trans-Mississippi, the other side of the Mississippi, then Kirby Smith is out there with another Confederate army. You know, so he was always hopeful. He was just a diehard, somebody who would just not give up. But Robert E. Lee didn't make up his mind until April 9th, and he had to try that one last attack. And certainly men were killed and wounded on both sides in that combat that really didn't have to die.
So did they decide that day, okay, Lee's army is going to surrender?
They decided to get together and talk about the surrender terms. And I would encourage anybody to go down there. The National Park Service has done a great job of preserving the little village of Appomattox Courthouse, and it's really well done. And they got together famously in the McLean House, and it's really interesting. Wilmer McLean and his family lived just off of the First Manassas battlefield, and then after that battle happened, he decided to move his family, you know, out of Northern Virginia to get away from the war. So they got away from the war, and then the war in Virginia, not the entire war, because people are mistaken about that. You see that all the time. But the war didn't end, you know, at Appomattox. The career of the Army of Northern Virginia and the war in Virginia pretty much ended at Appomattox Courthouse in Virginia. But the war went on for months and months, especially out west and on the seas. There was a commerce raider, the Shenandoah, that was sinking Boston whalers in the North Atlantic into the fall of that year, just because they didn't know. They didn't know the war was over. You know, we didn't have the internet. We didn't have those kind of communications. They didn't know the war was over. So they pretty much decimated the Boston whaling fleet out in the North Pacific just because they didn't know.
The North Atlantic.
The North Pacific. In the North Pacific. Yeah, they're way out there in the North Pacific. In the Bering Sea out there, way out there. Yeah, just decimating them. So Grant and Lee get together in the McLean House, and Lee suggests that Grant write down the surrender terms as he considers them, and then Grant goes over them. Lee goes over them, and then tells Grant that he doesn't know if Grant is familiar with this situation, but the men in the Confederate Army, in the cavalry, and certainly some of the artillerymen that were still there, they owned their own horses. They weren't government-issued horses. And he said that if he would let the men keep their horses, then they would be very useful to them in planting time and as they get home, you know, to their farms. And so Grant allowed that to happen. And from the very beginning, like Abraham Lincoln, Grant was very conciliatory, and it meant a lot to those Confederates. And one of my ancestors rode home to South Boston, you know, on the horse that Grant, Ulysses S. Grant, allowed him to save, to take home for the planting and everything, and to use on the farm.
Which I guess, I imagine in April, early April, they got to it right away.
That's right. They got right into it, got right
back. They had to get a crop in the field right when they got home.
That's right. That's right. But that's a great scene there in the McLean parlor. It's been painted many times. There are many famous paintings. Robert E. Lee gets introduced around, and one of the aides to Ulysses S. Grant was a guy by the name of Parker, who was a full-blooded Indian. And supposedly, Lee, when he gets to him and shakes his hand, said, I'm glad to see we have a real American here. And Parker supposedly shot back to Robert E. Lee, we're all Americans here. So many, many poignant moments there at Appomattox and in the McLean House. And then, of course, there's the time when, you know, Lee exits the McLean House. The surrender documents are signed, and it's all official. And the federal officers on the porch salute him, and he gets on his horse and rides back into his army. And, of course, the men knew what had happened.
Yep. So where does Lee go then? I've only got a couple minutes here, but where does Lee go after this?
Lee rode back.
I know
back,
he ends up in Lexington. But
yeah,
I mean,
Lee rode back initially, rode back to Richmond, and then took up residence in the house on Franklin Street, which is just off of the Capitol grounds. It's just a few blocks.
So he's there when Lincoln comes to visit?
No, Lincoln had already come and gone.
Okay.
So this is much later. And by the time Robert E. Lee gets back to Richmond, Lincoln is dead. And Lee, like a lot of men in the leadership in the South, understood that that did not bode well for the South, the assassination of Abraham Lincoln. Only the fanatics like John Wilkes Booth and some other crazies would think that the assassination of Lincoln would actually help the South at that point. It did not bode well.
Yeah.
For the South.
So it was done and Reconstruction begins.
Reconstruction begins.
Which is arguably a horrible time, a really tragic time for African Americans across the South.
Absolutely.
The end of the war was not the end of the tragedies and the horrors faced.
Reconstruction and Jim Crow and all of that, that horrible time. Yeah.
Well, it's been fantastic, Rick. Thank you very
much. Well, thanks.
Much.
It's been a lot of fun.
Yeah,
I didn't think we'd ever get
really,
here.
This has really been something. Months in the making.
Months in the making,
25,
absolutely.
25 significant battles of the U.S. Civil War that were fought here in Virginia with Rick Britton. He's online at rickbritton.com. Thank you, Rick, very much.
Thank you. I've enjoyed it.
You've been listening to Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot. Charlottesville Right Now is broadcast live Monday through Friday on News Radio 1070 WINA from 4 to 6 p.m. Best-selling author and historian Coy Barefoot is the host and producer. To interact with Coy and his guests, you can call 434-977-1070. Coy can be reached at barefoot@wina.com. This audio download has been made possible by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network. Visit SeavillePodcast.com for more.